Welcome, Crossing Hands, episode 5. With me is Lloyd. How are you tonight?
Quite well, sir. Yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. I've been spending the evening with Mr. Jameson, so I'm feeling well and relaxed.
Well, as many know, I'm brewing the holiday mead, so we're moving well along ourselves.
How is that? How's that coming?
It's quite well. It's a pretty redneck setup, but you can imagine the results.
Yeah, quality. It's nothing, you know, if you're going to do it, it's worth doing right. And the home style is always the best. Excuse me. So, now I know a little bit about your background. You've been studying karate. I forget your exact style.
All right. I usually have to dumb it down and just say American karate, or just say my instructor's name to most of the people that I run into at tournaments whenever they inevitably ask me about it.
Yeah.
The way things work out, after the kata portion of my division, people will come up to me, or if they've seen me at a previous tournament, they'll just come up to me and ask me things. But given the present company, I can go ahead and say what that style is. Now, you got to take into account that part of this is the problem you had in the United States in the 1960s, being that people would learn little bits and pieces of things, learn a name, and just slap it onto a style. So it's not necessarily the same thing. Yeah. So officially, the style is a blend of Okinawan Todai, or Todai, however you're supposed to pronounce that, Shotokan karate, Taekwondo, which specific type of Taekwondo they never bothered to elaborate, and Koshoryu Kenpo.
Yeah.
Which pretty much just tell you that we follow along with the trigrams. That's really all that tells you. But in practice, it's just American karate. It is just a Shotokan derivative that's practiced along those same lines and developed along those same lines, much like every other Shotokan derivative has in the United States in the last, what, 60, almost 60 years?
Yeah. Ah, yes, the indigenous martial arts of the United States. It's always fun. No, it is. There's at least there's a type of like cultural continuity. All of the best martial artists in history have had a cultural and a martial kind of combination of skills. So it's one of those things where meeting people, how can I say this without being disrespectful? the scrubs that are getting dusted in street fights are usually, you know, I'm a mixed martial arts man. It's like, all right, well, technically all martial arts are mixed, so you're not really actually saying anything.
Yeah, you're not wrong at this point.
Don't mind me,
moving venues.
Understandable. I mean, so this, anything that has a little bit of history behind it always just gets more, you know, like a couple of notches up in my book. It's a nice change from just people kind of blank, you know, given the blank, like two blanks. What do you mean? Blank stare.
When asked what their style is,
yeah, I think that's like, whatever. It's Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It's like, yeah, there's nothing Brazilian about the way you're doing this. It's barely even jiu-jitsu. Like, that's not how you choke somebody out. That's not how you do it. You know, it's like, it's not my specialty. Obviously, as a taller guy, I like to stay on my feet as much as possible. But it's like, if even I know how to do a proper, you know, double leg takedown, and you can't do this shit.
keep going. I'm just plugging up my laptop charger.
All right. Yeah, it's nice to hear people know. Like I said, it's nice to hear when someone knows actually exactly what they're doing, because it is. It's a shame. It's one thing if you're.
Well, I mean, despite my age, I try to learn the entirety of what I'm doing, because I've been doing this for a good over 20 years. Let's see. 1996 to now would be 23 years.
Wow, you've got as much time in as I do.
And considering I'm a good bit younger than you, I think. Yeah. No offense.
Yeah, I'm 41, so.
Yeah, I'm 29. I've been doing this since I was a kid. You know how people say, I remember you bringing this up in another podcast, another episode. You said something to the effect of somebody said, oh, well, I didn't start when I was 5 or 6, so there's no point in starting now. Look here, motherfucker. I started when I was 6, and I am not some kind of Olympic badass. You know,
you're right? They've read too many comics. You know, you can only get the chi if you start as a child. That's ridiculous. You know, there are people in there legit older than my parents. There are some people that I've trained with, you know, and they say with this, you know, like this smile on their face, like, oh, I can't even feel chi. It's like, this is, you know,
they're proud of that.
Yeah. Like in the particular story I'm telling, a Taiji Chuan guy, this guy's one of the instructors at the school. It's like, dude, you've been doing this. You know, the teacher came to Boston in 1988. You joined the class just before, you know, New Year's 1990. You've been doing this longer than most of the people in the class have been alive, and you can't feel chi. Like, I gotta, like, the girl I was dating at the time, I was like, I thought I heard of feel chi in like 6 weeks, and you're sitting here. That's not the correct attitude to have, especially.
That is definitely not the correct attitude to have.
Oh, so.
When did you get into internal arts this early? Hmm.
Yeah, right? Oh, it's a shame. And people waste it, you know? With most people, I've told a couple of people, you practicing this style is like having a Corvette that you take to the bottom of the driveway to pick the mail up. And that's all you do with it. This is a complete waste of time. Like, for what you need, just go to a gym, you know, use the Nautilus machine, do some rows, you know, maybe try to get like 10 chin-ups out by the end of the year. You'll be fine. That's all you are looking for. You don't need to do this, you know. But I Taiji Chuan was the first internal style I learned, but it's old man style. And a lot of people take that as just the whole moving slowly thing. But really, it's more, if you do actually learn how to apply it martially, it's civilian self-defense. You know, I've said it before, you know, please don't hurt me. I won't let you.
I've heard before that that Tai Chi Chuan, the biggest thing about it is people don't understand the grappling applications. They understand that there's supposed to be some kind of strikes. But they don't understand that you don't want someone that practices Tai Chi Chuan to get their hands on you.
Yeah.
That's the biggest part.
It's not about punching them. It's joint locks. It's supposed to be, the application is supposed to be about 80% joint locks, maybe about 20% knockdowns and takedowns. And then
are you familiar with Ramsey Dewey? Years ago, he was a MMA fighter.
Yeah. I think I've heard that.
Yeah, he's a coach. He teaches at a gym in Shanghai, China now. Mm-hmm. And he has I've watched it a couple times just because I was interested in the concept. I was interested in telling the story. But he talks about training with some guys that were practicing Sanda. Mm-hmm. And he gets to the point in the story where the coach for the camp says, all right, today we're going to go and train with a Tai Chi Chuan practitioner. And he gets up with this guy, and he's in his mid to late 80s. And the guy's out there practicing, and he says, come at me. And he had to have a translator back then because he didn't speak very well. I forget the Chinese dialect it is, but he didn't speak it very well. And he says he thought the guy just wanted to, you know, light spar, touch sparring or something like that. So he goes to, you know, lightly touch the guy. And the next thing he knows, he's on the ground and in pain. And this is a tiled floor in China in a public square. Yeah. And he's just laying there shocked. And he gets back up and the guy says, no, 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 come at me. Come at me, for real, come at me.
Yeah.
And the translator's telling him this about as fast as the guy says it. So, you know, he actually goes to try and attack this guy and he's on the ground. Every couple of times, you know, every couple of seconds, the guy says, come at me seriously.
Yeah.
And every time he's on the ground, he just can't lay a hand on this guy. Every time he so much as moves, this Tai Chi Chuan guy, he says that he was a master. I don't know for a fact that he's a master, but he was an older man. And he said, well, how long did it take you to get this skill? And he said, 80, however many, he said 80 something years. And he was talking about every day. He said, yeah, it takes every day for mastery.
Yeah. That for that style, you know, there's a saying, my primary style is the oldest of the big three internal styles. Xing Yi Chuan. Xing Yi kills in a year. Taiji doesn't leave home for 10. Because you, the best way to put this, a lot of the techniques in Tai Chi Chuan, they don't work if you try and muscle them, you know, like some of the takedowns that'll work because that's just simple leverage. But for a lot of the joint locks, you know, you need that extra boost that the internal training method will give you, that sensitivity. Because otherwise, you know, if you're bashing, you're not going to be able to neutralize, you know.
Well, that's like if you take something as basic as the ki, practiced in karate, people don't understand the internal art behind it. Yeah. They don't understand the increase in force and pressure that they can get.
Yeah.
They don't understand it one way or the other. And you take that and apply it to an entire art.
Yeah.
People have no idea until it actually happens to them. They don't realize that this is even possible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They think that, you know, one of the big phrases they use in the Tai Chi classics, draw them in and then have them fall into emptiness. You know, people think that it's got to be something special or something, you know, mystical. Like, no, that's not the cheap part. That's just, you know, that's just strategy. And that story you told is a perfect illustration. You come in, they have you, if you're familiar with the phrase, use 4 ounces to move 1,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very light redirect, you know. Another phrase, it's in the Tao Te Ching, off by an inch at the beginning, you miss by 1,000 miles at the end. All they do is just kind of put you off just a little bit as you start to get going, and you go right off into the void. And if you're lucky, you only land on your ass. But if you're not lucky, you land directly on top of your head, which is the interesting thing about, you know, I practice the Northern Chinese martial arts, so they tend to be taller people, longer limbs, a lot more open space than down in the South. You know, they've got steps, they've got some mountains, open plains. So they use a lot of big techniques, a lot of big movement, a lot of big kicks. You know, there's a lot of throwing in most Northern styles, but the really vicious ones don't throw. They do knockdowns, meaning if we're standing face to face in opposition, I'm going to make you fall directly on your head exactly where you're standing. You know, not toss you over there a couple of feet away. Just you make them invert and drop on their head, or you make them turn sideways and drop on their head.
If I'm not mistaken, in the language, the phrases for knocking down, defeating, killing, and destroying completely are all pretty much the same kind of vocabulary. It all pretty much has the same meaning.
Yeah, it's basically you know, synonyms and homonyms. You know, a lot of times you get a different sense. You know, there's saying it in plain English and then saying it with kind of an educated, you know, sophisticated flourish. There's a lot of that in the Chinese martial arts, and you can usually tell like who the originators are based on some of the vocabulary. You know, when you read a lot of the Tai Chi Chuan classics, you can tell that these are upper class people for the most part. Mm-hmm. The communists like to hold up the Chen family because they're basically just a village full of farmers that had a couple of side businesses, but made most of their money just doing regular manual labor, regular people work. But when you read those, you know, their theory, this is the kind of stuff that you only get if you're taking the imperial exams and getting, you know, jobs in the imperial bureaucracy or whatever. But then one of those,
we had a lot of like, that same thing in karate.
Hmm?
You had a lot of that same thing in karate. The people that were learning it, it was not a poor man's game by any means. It was, you know, you were somebody important if you were trained in karate back in, you know, what was it? The Ryukyu Islands.
Yeah.
back in their government. If it they had a lot of Chinese influence there culturally, I mean. It's the same reason they had a lot of problems whenever they tried to make karate mainstream in Japan. They were too Chinese.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole story that the character for Kara originally referred to the Tang Dynasty. And when the Japanese decided to really promote karate, they had to change it to empty.
Mm.
Because you can't have your national martial art be those fun. You know, we just had two wars.
Yeah, if I remember,
we're better than them.
Originally, it was called the Hand from China. I don't know the exact words in Okinawan, but originally they called it the Hand from China, and they had to kind of change that because the Japanese are, you know, at the time pretty racist. Right. If you were anything other than Japanese, you were a second class citizen. That's the entire reason that we have the karate gi and the karate belt. They were taken from judo because judo was Japanese.
Yeah.
It was acceptable.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to see, you know, the even in the Korean styles, there's a lot of that sort of thing too. The hapki and hapkido is the same as the aiki and aikido. Tang hand. So it's
I might catch a lot of shit for saying it, but I can think of a lot of guys I know that practice various Korean martial arts, and they'd probably give me some shit for saying so, but a lot of the things that Taekwondo or even Hapkido do now, they were heavily influenced by the success of the Japanese martial arts, heavily influenced. And hey, like I said, karate guy, I'm practicing American karate, but it was originally not Japanese. It's just a matter of that's where it was popularized. We're all kind of having to deal with Jigoro Kano's success. You know,
yeah. There's those titans in a given art that are just gonna put a stamp on everything. In the Chinese martial arts world, those Bruce Lee comments are inevitable. I wrote a little something on that about Bruceism. People getting that look in their eye, like, oh yeah, he was the greatest. It's like this guy died like 30 years before you were born. You've only seen one of his three movies, and you're sitting here like. So sometimes it pisses me off a little bit. I've been known on nights like this where I've, you know, had a little to be like, yeah, Bruce Lee is the real Bruce Lee.
That's part of the reason I point you to Ramsey Dewey. He had a pretty controversial video where he said somebody had asked him in a comment who would win between Muhammad Ali and Bruce Lee. He said, well, considering that Muhammad Ali outweighed him by a good 60 pounds and one of them had professional fighting experience and the other one did not. In the context of a professional sport fight, Muhammad Ali's going to win.
Yeah.
He called a lot of hate for that. But hey, under those contexts, that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, people forget that this guy is, you know, he's basically average height and average weight for like a thin kind of wiry build. And, you know,
average height for the time nowadays. Yeah,
like, he was like, beating up all these tall Californians. It's like he was beating up a bunch of goofballs that had never been in fights before. When you're the only one in the room that's actually been punched in the face before, it's real easy to dominate everybody.
Yeah. I mean, we see that today with, we see that today with the guys that have learned judo or jiu-jitsu. Yeah. Guys that have grappling experience, if you put them in a no-holds-barred fight, if they can get their hands on the other guy, they're going to start to grapple with that guy. And if that guy doesn't know how to grapple, of course they're going to make him look bad.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how good that guy is. If in a stand-up fight, he's going to look foolish if you're allowing grappling. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing.
Exactly. I tell people all the time,
go ahead.
The man that beats you. It's not the style.
Right.
If you're coming in completely unprepared, you know, I've had this talk with Yoga Midnight and Mako Dekal, one of the Kung Fu discussion group episodes. You know, if you want to learn to defend yourself against somebody who's going to try and take you to the ground jiu-jitsu style, then you need to make a jiu-jitsu friend and have him just endlessly try takedowns on you, single leg, double leg, whatever, front, side, back, whatever. Whatever you think you're going to encounter, you need to drill that over and over again until you have a natural defense for it. Then you can try to build up a natural counterattack. Then you can build up a natural, you know, like sort of a way to cancel it. You'll know what you're looking for. You'll recognize it when it's starting to come your way, and you can do something about it in advance and preempt it. But you need to start there from, you know, grab this leg over and over again and dump me on my back. You know, that's
hey, to say it more simply, People look at it as, oh, I learned this thing and now I have to completely unlearn this thing and learn this other thing. No, 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 no. What you have to do is take what you are good at, learn a little bit about these other things. If you want to know how to handle a guy that knows jiu-jitsu, learn a little bit of jiu-jitsu, and then you will be able to use your base martial art. If you learn a little bit of judo, you'll know how to handle a judo guy. You learn a little bit of wrestling, you'll know how to handle a wrestler. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Learn a little bit of what they do, and all of a sudden, the things that you know how to do start to work.
Yeah, yeah. If you, that's probably the biggest issue for most martial artists in any context, anywhere in the world. It's, if you're an armchair quarterback, you're not going to really understand. And there are a lot of people who want to be martial artists, but they're all performance and there's no martial part, you know, they're all,
oh, absolutely,
purple satin sequined outfits doing fucking gymnastics with a pole that weighs, you know, an ounce and a half instead of actually something like
the competition bow. Yeah.
Spring steel swords where if you look at it long enough, it just starts to vibrate. I hate those so much. they really bother me. I've had a couple of people be like, you should put a team in at one of these competitions. I'm like, no, absolutely not. Like, I can't.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
They don't do like full contact tournaments. They have, like, at most, they have push hands.
Send them in and dominate everybody that doesn't know how to fucking fight, and then you'll have a name.
Yeah, that's exactly. To basically become Cobra Kai, except instead of saying sweep the leg, it'd be like grab him by the forehead and fucking toss him out of the ring. I want to see this guy cry, make him cry, make his mom feel bad.
Hey, man, that's like I said, I'm not sitting here trying to become a point fighting champion, but I did a lot of it this year just because, for one, a lot of these guys don't know how to fight, period.
Yeah.
By far, the most dangerous people that I've faced in the past year were the people that had never been in a real fight before. Because as soon as they get up with somebody that outweighs them, I mean, I'm a heavyweight, so there's no limit, right? You know, if they're over a certain weight, they've got to face me and I'm probably bigger than them. Yeah. So they're going to be scared. They've never been in a real fight. And now their first real, it's not real because it's a competition, but to them it's real fighting. And their first real fight is this big ogre.
Yeah.
They're terrified. They're loaded up. They're going to be hitting as hard as they possibly can because they think I'm going to hurt them, even though I'm holding back because I don't want this guy to go home in a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
You know?
The fun stuff.
Yeah. But the most dangerous people are the people that don't know how to fight and think they do.
I know. Oh, man. I've caught a lot of shots to the nose. So I had sepsis about 10 years ago. I was sick basically all of 2009. 2010, I managed to, you know, go back to my old school, Yang's Martial Arts in Boston, the original YMAA Boston. When Dr. Yang was still living out there before he bought his mountain in California to train his disciples. And that's not even a joke. That's literally what he's doing right now with himself. So I rejoined the school. The guy that taught me the style and my classmates, you know, there are maybe four or five other hardcore guys still left. Our teacher had left the school because he had gotten married, had some kids, you know, gone to learn acupuncture. You know, I had taken over and was the instructor for a couple of years. And then, I started working security, got put on the, 4 to midnight shift, couldn't really make most of the class times anymore. So somebody else took over. You know, that guy had moved on and somebody else had taken over, one of my classmates from the original group. And, they've got like 6 or 8 newbies, you know. I think at this point I was probably like 36, 37 years old. There's a bunch of people that are like, you know, I'm used to, hey, after class, we're going to go down to the bar down the street and get some beers. And it's like, oh, wait, most of you aren't allowed to drink. Oh, I guess we can get pizza then, kind of. One of these kids, you know, I was working on a two-man routine. And, I had been a little rusty, not just having been sick. I hadn't done this routine in a long time because, you know, I had students, but nobody was up to the level that you need to do this particular exercise. And I was just a half a beat off and this kid came right in over the top of my lead hand and got me dead in the nose. You know, luckily I've got the big Irish head. So his fist hit and then he took it away and I had this look on my eyes and he's like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, you don't understand. You were in middle school the last time somebody was able to do that to me. So you did really good. He's like, you're not gonna punish me? I'm like, what did they tell you that I do? Like, I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna make you sweat, and you might not be able to walk the right way tomorrow when I'm done, because we're gonna do something. He's like, oh, I'm like, I'm just fucking with you. I'm fine. You're fine. Just like, you know. But the rest of that, like, the rest.
Two things come to mind. Two things come to mind when you say that.
Yeah.
Number one, I can't remember the guy's name now. You know, I'm bad with names, but. He was one of the guys that were a part of karate back in the Okinawa days, and the days where it was only in Okinawa. And in training, he was fighting with his master. He was sparring, rather, with his master. But this is the time where they are treating it more like a fight than sparring. You remember my definitions. You have a fighter, you have a competitor, you have a self-defense guy. These are different things.
Yeah.
But... So it's more like an actual fight. They're trying to survive an environment of violence they've created. And he manages to strike his master square in the nose, blood streaming down his face. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. And then his master yells at him and berates him. He says, what are you doing? Don't stop hitting me. Because it's the wrong thing to do. No, yeah. You got that hit in. Keep striking me.
Yeah.
That's the right thing to do. If we're in a real fight, that's what you do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hard to impress on people. I had a nice bare knuckle sparring match with a certain individual that I refer to with a disrespectful nickname, the man called Tubbs. And he managed to, you know, he got my arms up, nice open belly shot, and he took it without hesitation, which was good. But that was, you know, when I had the ostomy bag for Crohn's disease. Luckily there was nothing there to worry about. It wasn't exactly in pillow mode, but like he hit me basically square, like right on the middle of it. And it's like, you know, I kind of looked up and he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And you know, he dropped his hands. I hauled right off, like right across the face. Like, if you're going to give me a shot like that, I'm going to hit you. Like, he's like, well, I didn't want to hurt you. I'm like, it'll be fine. You know, later that night I was kind of doing the,
That always gets me. People say that. I don't want to hurt you. This is violence time.
Yeah.
What did you think we were doing?
Yeah.
You got a good hit in. Get another and another and another. That's what I signed up for. That's what you signed up for. At least I understood it, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, I told him straight up. I was like, look, I can't progress because nobody will fight me. So I'm going to make you good enough to fight me so that I can get better. And he was like, you make it sound like you're using me. I was like, you're a body in my human experiment. I'm going to treat you like that. And if you suck, then you're disposable. So put your fucking hands up.
Hey, that's it, man. I had that very same thing. So the story goes, and you don't know this story. I haven't told you this, but a couple of people do, people that might watch this. So flashback about a year and 6 months or so, something like that. This was the impetus that made me realize I had to get back into practicing martial arts at the dojo that I grew up in, which I had been there from 96 on up to 2014. I was gone for about 7 months where I had been run over. I've been run over before. Don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I've heard. Well, that's more than once, though, that's happened, right?
Well, that time was on an ATV.
That was the original?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. That time, you're thinking about the two different ankle injuries, but yeah, the first time was from being run over. So broke my ankle in 8 places, my shoulder in 5, and I was out for a while. I came back, and then I left when I went to jail.
Pretty good reason to leave.
Yeah, it's a story for another day. Well, suffice to say, there were a couple of people that were black belts in that dojo that were parts of law enforcement. And considering that there were a couple of kids in attendance as well, I decided at the time that was a bad influence. I didn't go back. When I did go back, it was a very prodigal son type thing.
Yeah.
Granted, there was 10 years of repentance involved and all these other things.
Yeah.
But 2018, I decided I needed to go back. Problem was, my instructor doesn't have a cell phone, and he doesn't use the internet. No Facebook, no messaging, no ads, no idea where the hell his school has moved to, because the original school was deserted.
Yeah.
The woman that ran that place, the woman that owned it, she was like Martin Luther King. She had a dream. And in that dream, if there were people fighting in that building, then they were going to come to devastating harm, so they had to leave. Okay. To that day, to this day, the building that we originally trained in, that was the home dojo for 20 or 30 years, it's sitting empty. No one's using it. They had moved, and I didn't know where they had moved to, so I had to find another place, because at the time, I had found an obituary for someone with my instructor's exact name.
Yeah.
First, middle, and last exact name. Same town, same name. Turns out it wasn't him, but they had the exact same name. I guess they were cousins. Anyway, I thought he was dead, so I had to try to find another school to train in, and I had that very same thing that you were talking about. I had gone to that place. I had started training under them, and I don't remember why I originally started telling the story, but that's the story of how I was training over there. It's 6 months over there, and then I found my first dojo again. So now I'm back over there. It'll hit me whenever I watch the replay of this why I started telling that story, and I'm gonna have to come back and tell you where I was going with that.
No, I do. I you have told me that story before. I've heard this before.
Have I? Yeah. Oh, I wrote about it.
I've heard the story. Yeah. I've heard the story of. I've heard a couple of the ankle injury stories. I heard the story of finding your original teacher again.
Yeah, that was on the blog. I had the way I injured that same ankle again was in sparring the instructor at the second school I trained at. Sparred that guy. He's a lightweight. I'm a heavyweight. So in having the footwork to not be struck by this man, at one point I slid back. My foot caught the mats, those rubber mats that fit together like puzzle pieces. And the protective gear we were wearing over our feet curled over. It caught the lip of the rubber. Yeah. So I looked down at my leg and my foot is facing up like this. Tore three ligaments in my ankle doing that, partly because of the arthritis from the first time I had run over it and broke it in eight places. So I've got a big ass left ankle.
That's rough.
But I do remember the second story I was going to tell you 5 minutes ago when I told you I had two things. So here's the second thing, so that we have some semblance of keeping this on a linear train of thought. You were talking about somebody catching you good. Oh boy, do I have an extremely similar circumstance there. This was May 29th, but it might not have been, of 2019. This was a tournament in Colombia. Oh boy. The guy that I ended up in the finals with, this is the fighting competition. This is the Kumite. Okay. The guy that I end up in the finals with is a guy that I train with. We train together, and the only reason I do tournaments is a combination of, number one, make me better at things that I'm bad at right now. Number two, bring some glory to the dojo that I grew up in, because they did me a good turn in helping me develop.
Yeah.
And if I make them look good, if I do good in a tournament, that makes them look good, and that might help bring some money my instructor's way, people signing up and things like that. So, and give me some new training partners in the future. So I'm down here fighting in the finals. This guy just had his last match. He was just fighting in the semifinals. I've had time to rest. My match was earlier. His match is right now. And they say, do you need a couple of minutes to rest? And he goes, no, I'm good to go now. I said, all right, then. We're both geared up. And the very first thing that he does is drop a reverse punch into my liver, which the reverse punch is probably karate's strongest punch. And we're not talking about that thing where people call a right straight or reverse punch. No. We're talking about that level change, drop all your weight down into your opponent's torso with a strong right hand. Right into my liver. Not going to lie. Peed my pants a little bit. It was pretty bad. I stayed standing because fuck that guy. But I stayed standing. But I ate a good shot and I thought about it. I stopped. I thought about it. And my immediate reaction was, I'm about to teach this kid something because he's a good 10 years younger than me. Yeah. I'm about to teach this kid something. Said, no, you know what? I remember being 19. I remember being his age. His mom's here. His dad's here. He probably has his girlfriend around here somewhere. He doesn't want to look bad in front of him.
Yeah.
So we turned it up a little bit, just like you were talking about. Yeah. No, I'm going to make you sweat a little bit. We're going to put on a good show. I don't care who wins it, because if I win it or if you win it, our school's winning it either way. I don't care. It wasn't until later when he said, man, I'm sorry about that liver shot, but I knew that I was tired and you weren't, and there was no way I was going to be able to match you unless I hit you in the liver. I said, you son of a... But it'll be like that sometimes. This is, it's violence time. It's what you signed up for, you know?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, you don't get to be shocked when that happens. But that's, you know, we also did a whole episode in the Kung Fu discussion group about how important it is to actually learn anatomical targets, because all this stuff is useless if you don't actually know. You know how to throw a punch, great. You don't know where to try and punch somebody.
Absolutely.
That's something that always bothered me about a lot of different styles, a lot of schools, a lot of people. It's just like, you try to say like, yeah, you know, they'll be like, oh, well, I hit him in the face. Where in the face? What am I trying to do here? Am I trying to knock this guy out? Am I trying to break his jaw, his nose, his orbital bone? What am I trying to do here? Am I just going to, you know, do that weirdo punch with the thumb folded in and the kind of like wrist is bent, you know, like, what am I doing here?
Yes, yes. Shoke, the first fist.
Yeah. trying to show people different things. It's just like, that stuff doesn't work. It's like, you don't even know what I was going to say yet. Like, I'm not talking about like, as much as I love Shaw Brothers movies, you know, I'm not talking about like, you know, oh, what was it? In Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, you know, he's poking those guys across the chest and arm. And you just see people just freeze in place. Like, I'm talking about that kind of stuff. I'm talking about, if I punch you here, you're going to throw up. If I punch you here, you're going to gasp and pass out. If I punch you here, you're going to look me in the eye, slowly, slowly kneel yourself down and slowly lay yourself out. And then you're going to pass out.
Hey, there's a big part of that for...
What'd you say?
There's a big part of that in teaching people how to deal with their ego.
Yeah. You know?
Especially in sparring.
That's the whole point of the first like month of sparring, is just repeatedly showing somebody. You know, like, oh, you did good in class. Can't beat me though. Mako actually has come to realize, you know, I've made a couple of comments, you know, on these video calls with him and Yoga Midnight. You know, I got to say like, da da da, you know what I mean, Matt. And he's like, yeah, yeah. Mako, Alex is like, you haven't done that with me yet. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I couldn't for a while. And I kind of like, I try to like keep the evil inside. Like, I don't want him to see it. Like, you should definitely trust me and drop your guard though. I promise I won't do too much damage. I mean, you'll be able to use it eventually. The nerves, you know, a lot of times when it comes to like the cavity strikes, there's a good portion of them that people will actually learn that are really just nerve clusters. You know, if you buy an anatomy book, you're going to be able to figure out where a lot of this stuff is. And the only real difficult part is just angle and force. If you've been in a fight, you know, whether you realize you know about that kind of stuff, you know about that kind of stuff. Because there's you know, those places in the body where you can put everything you have into it, and unless the person is substantially weaker than you, you're not knocking them out. And then there's a couple other places that you can just kind of, you know, like knocking on a heavy door, just a, you know, it's a tap at just the right angle and you just see the eyes kind of turn off. And trying to explain those sorts of things to people without just going, see this guy over here, watch me turn this off, watch this. Like, but sometimes you do, I mean,
the lights just go out.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to teach like that. I am very inclined to teach like that. My teacher is not a violent person, but you know, he's not me. So it's one of those things where I would love to just kind of like, who has done wrong in class today? You're today's victim. Step on up. We're going to show everybody else how to do fun stuff. But
hey, man, that's now. That's kind of the way I was raised, though. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. My mom's two brothers taught me all sorts of, like, well before I started learning martial arts, I learned all these things. But you know what happens if you hit somebody here? No, uncle, what happens? Wham! Oh, So by the time I got out of high school and started studying martial arts, it was one of those things where, like,
hell, I was talking about in the martial arts, but, you know, like I said, I started them when I was six, so yeah, there's a lot of that in there.
Well, I mean, that's, people are afraid to hit children, and you shouldn't hit children.
But you shouldn't hit children. Shouldn't. Now.
But if you're going to hit children, you should definitely do it in a martial arts context. Because you teach them, see how much, you know, this is why you don't abuse the power. You just use
it. In a building with the waiver printed on the wall on 8x11 paper.
Right? Picture of Drago. If he dies, he dies. And that's one of the reasons why I don't have a brick and mortar school, because that would definitely be something, you know. I've got this bamboo cane I've mentioned numerous times. It comes up to about my waist.
So. Hey, man, that's how you learn the importance of ab training, right there, the bamboo cane.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where people are like, what's that for? This is for when you ask questions, when it's not question and answer time. When's question and answer time? Never question and answer time. Do what I fucking tell you.
I have a lot of that, man. A lot of it where I'm looking at it going, this is not the 90s anymore, man.
Yeah.
I have a lot of that.
A recent conversation where I made a comment about like the flaw in the American student, and the person I was talking to was like, you're American, can you say that? And I'm like, no, this is a problem that we have culturally in the martial arts. Americans generally think that you show your intelligence by asking questions. But when it's one of those things where you need to stop talking and start watching, if you're too busy trying to come up with a clever question, you're not going to notice what the teacher does. In which case, when you do ask a question, it's going to be fucking stupid, because if you'd watched, the answer would have been obvious.
The proper question teachers, to ask.
I definitely got this from teaching, and I know a lot of people get this too, is I don't like having to repeat myself unnecessary times, you know, with the basics.
The proper questions that you ask are not asked to your instructor. They're asked to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And so those things, if you just... You know, with the man called Tubbs learning an internal style, he had all these questions about chi and stuff. I'm like, how often do you stand? And he's like, well, I do whatever, 10 minutes every day, this and that. I'm like, all right, well, what good's 10 minutes? You know, the old way of training is the first year, all you do for 16 hours a day is stand. Like, they're not trying to build up muscle. These are people that are already doing manual labor. They had plenty of muscle. This is about doing something else. You need to figure something else out. And I can't give you, I can tell you the answer, but it's not going to mean anything. You need body knowledge.
You need the personal experience in your body.
Yeah. And it's surprisingly, you know, it's consistency when it comes to that energy stuff. It's consistency that's going to get it for you. You know, you can't muscle it. You can't force it. You can't encourage it. You just have to do it. It's a knack, and you have to get the knack. You know, riding a bike, you know, doing that thing where people, you know, they snap their fingers holding the bottle cap and they shoot it across the room. Like, it's just the knack. You have to get the knack. You have to learn how to do it. So,
how about the bottle cap challenge, huh? Those people doing those tornado kicks on bottles for Instagram and shit?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm, you know, I am openly. You know, I'm proud of being a true son of Boston. So my favorite one is the guy that comes in slow motion, completely misses the bottle. And you see his kid is just kind of like dancing across the room in the background. And you see that leg come right into the chest. The kid goes back off. I know it's awful, but I fucking love that one. Yeah, it's probably my favorite. I can see my friend that I mentioned earlier, a good friend of mine, Paul. He has a karate background, but he has absolutely no idea. You know, he doesn't know anything about his lineage or his background. All he knows is that, you know, when he was about 10, the church that he was a part of, a guy joined the church that used to be in the military and practiced martial arts.
So he's the typical American karate practitioner.
Yeah, they were like, we're going to, you know, his dad was the head of the church. He was like, we're going to teach you boys karate.
And so they all get together with this guy. They ranged in age from like 8, 9 years old up to like 15, 16. And, you know, that first day, one of them's like, well, what style of karate is this? And he was like, oh, what style? And just like railed the kid right in the chest. Like, all of you fight me right now. And they just spent like 5 years. Every day they would attack this guy as a group, and he would beat the shit out of all of them. And then when they started to get a little good,
that's how a lot of that American karate went. You know, it's just, if you fight, and if you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't, you know.
Yeah. When enough of them, when more than half of them were competent, then he got a kendo stick. And he was like, I'm going to use this, and you guys are going to fight me. And he's just, you know, dealing out strikes and stuff like that. So, you know, Paul has a very well-developed iron shirt without understanding any of the principles behind developing iron shirt. So it's one of those things where, like,
I can't say anything. I've got the same thing going on. I'll have that. I am the punch me guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm the guy that'll sit there and tighten everything and say, okay, first, do it loose. Do it loose. Yeah, punch me. You feel the meat go in. Second time, harden it, and then punch me.
Yeah.
And then they say, it's like a rock. It hurts. Oh, my. Yeah.
It's supposed to. That's how it's supposed to be.
And the thing is, you can do that too. You just have to endure an incredible amount of pain for a very long amount of time.
Right. Yeah, people don't. Yeah, it's, I mean, you could, a high tolerance for pain runs in my mom's family. So, like, I've got a little bit of an advantage over, like, a lot of people. It was easier for me to learn to take a punch because it was already kind of a, that was it. It's not that bad. Like, fighting kids my own age growing up, it was one of those things where I was like, why aren't you really hitting me? And they'd kind of, you know, it's already bad enough that they're kind of like, a lot of them are having to do a hop and like a skip to try and hit me. But by the time I got into the world of martial arts, you know,
you had the unusual experience of being the big kid that wasn't the bully.
Yeah. Well, I bullied, but I would bully people.
that's turnabout's fair play. They asked for it.
Yeah. Well, my friends will, you know, my girlfriend, when she met the man called Tubbs, he started telling these stories from our high school days. And he described it as, it was like a zoo full of psychopathic monsters. And I kind of made this face. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, that place was awesome. Everybody was relaxed all the time. Like, I had a blast. And he was like,
that's because they were scared.
Monsters. I'm like, oh shit, I was one of the monsters. Like, fuck that. You know, he's got two younger siblings. The middle one is a brother. That kid was 4 years younger than us. So when we were seniors, his brother, kid's name is Troy, was a freshman. Troy thought that because he was like, my big brother and his friends will bully anybody that gets in our way. We'll rule this school. And I was like,
oh, that guy.
I kind of like already didn't like the kid. So it was one of those things where I was like,
yeah, the kind of person that wants to have the illusion of strength through someone else's strength.
Yeah. And I've always hated, since I have always been larger, I'll back somebody up when they earn my respect, but don't point me at other people. I'm not a fucking pistol. You don't threaten other people with me. So
absolutely.
Those things where I was like, Oh, he said the magic words. Like, I think I got to get your brother. I think he needs to stuff himself in a locker right now. And I took him every day for the rest of this year. And he was like, well, I mean, he is an asshole. I was like, right.
What you got to do?
You know, I'd be sitting in shop and just kind of like look at the clock and realize like, oh, wait a minute.
Oh, we're taking it back to shop class.
I know where. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a tech high school. So we had, you know, as seniors, we had all of our shop time.
Oh, absolutely.
Block toward the end of the day. So I'd just be sitting there at like 1 o'clock, like,
Oh yeah. If everything goes belly up
in the hallway right now, I think I need to go to the bathroom. And he'd be like, well, I'm not saying you can't handle your own business, but maybe you need some help. And I'd be like, maybe we should get a bathroom pass and go for a walk. And we'd go find his brother, his friends, and be like, look at all these lockers. You guys look like you'd fit in these lockers. I think you should get in them right now. They'd be like, whoa, what the fuck? Oh, yeah. I'd catch one of them and be like, go knock his books down and kick him down the stairs, or I'm going to stick your head in the toilet. Who's my friend? Go do it now.
kind of feel like I want to grab you by the, you know, just, oh, it was brutal.
You went to one of the nicer. You went to one of the nicer tech school high schools.
Yeah,
our lockers were half lockers. We didn't even have the full locker.
No, no, we had the half lockers too. But I mean, yeah, these are smaller guys, like smaller, like normal sized children. So I was one of the only ones with adult size guys, of course. For anybody my size, is just one of those things where I'd make the crazy eyes and then kind of flinch them, and they'd be like, "All right, fine." Or
I guess being your height at the age of a juvenile would, yeah, that would have some persuasive power.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My first day in high school was hilarious. I scared a bunch of kids who thought I was a senior, and then when I showed up in the same homeroom, they thought that I had come to bully them. And it took them like a month to accept that I was really part of that class and I was only 13. And they were like, "You've got a mustache." I was like, "That guy's got a mustache. Like, how come you're not, you know, like, why am I the only one?" Like, "Well, he has back hair sticking up out of the back of his shirt too." And I'm like, "All right. Yeah. Well, he does have that." So only guy clean class in the middle of the day.
See, the thing about that is if it wasn't for how large I am, I would still fit into one of those half lockers. It's only like 5'7" or 5'8".
Yeah. I've
That's the thing. I know all of these martial artists that as soon as I meet them, I fully expect to be thrown, joint locked, or struck, and they're all at least 7 inches taller than I am. Yeah. Yourself included.
Right. Yeah, well, I've learned to take advantage of my height. So it's one of those things where I do really enjoy just kind of stepping off to that angle and just, you know, drop the hammer right on people.
Yeah, my brother did the same thing. Little brother.
It's one of the fun things about being tall is just doing that kind of like,
yeah,
physics. I'm not going to use my kung fu on you. I'm going to use physics at first and see. If you can handle physics, then I will show you honor and actually use my style.
Well, I have a lot of I have a lot of built-in resistance in the case of this death match. My little brother is 6'6" and 290, so I've got a lot of practice taking the hammer.
The rare occasion where I would have to kind of look up. I've got one cousin that's like that, where I kind of like I tilt my head back a little bit. I'm like, fuck, is this what it's like for regular people? Like, this is kind of annoying. No wonder they're all in such bad moods all the time.
Nah, they're just in bad moods because they're weak. I'm not little, but I'm short, and I'm in a pretty good mood all the time. Be big, you'll have a better life overall.
Yeah.
If you're short, the best thing you could ever do. Anyone who's listening to this that's short, lift weights, and practice martial arts. You'll have a better life.
Yeah, strength is where it's at. I mean, just in the last few years, I survived sepsis without getting treated because I had physical strength. I survived having my large intestine explode twice because I had physical strength, and I had something to live on when my guts stopped absorbing nutrients. So, you know, I mean, granted, you don't want to lose 100 pounds from
now. What'd you do to deal with Crohn's, by the way?
My presentation was unusual, as they say. So I didn't really have a lot of food sensitivities, just, sort of the basics, red meat, mushrooms, you know, the like hipster leafy vegetables like kale. That was the only stuff that would really trigger a flare up for me. So I was able to cut those out. I didn't have any of the pain, you know, and that, again, the family's, you know, pain tolerance probably served me really well there.
You probably
attributed it to martial arts every day for, you know, over a decade before all this started.
I was wondering if there was any TCM involved there.
Nah, not so much. I used a lot of like meditation and, you know, qi circulation meditation methods like Taoist Qigong stuff to kind of help manage some of the symptoms. But that was more for kind of keeping my strength up. It wasn't really until, you know, say 3 years ago or so where my weight just started to rapidly plummet, you know, but before Crohn's, I was usually around 220. My weight had dropped down to like maybe into 180s. So I wasn't exactly
sickly looking, but I was smaller. You know, I'm carrying more weight now than most of my Crohn's time. You know, I'm 240 right now, so you know, I'm 60 pounds heavier than the entire decade of my 30s. So it got to be an issue, like I said, about 3 years ago, where I just dropped from 180 to about 140. And then it would seesaw between 125 at the lowest to about 135, almost 140.
I think you were at the 170s whenever I had last asked you about it. That's why the 240 was such a shock to me, because you had gained back a good bit of weight, but you were not back to where you are now. Yeah, so no, that's why I was surprised.
And that was mostly I had an IV port just kind of like implanted in my upper arm here on the right. I'd spend like one 6 hour session and one 8 hour session every day for about 2 months, just being dosed with this protein vitamin mixture. So that was like, I needed to get my weight up before I was strong enough to go in for the surgery to do the resectioning on the large intestine. So it was pretty gruesome. I mean, I was literally a skeleton wrapped in dry parchment. So yeah, it worked out.
I have essentially eaten nothing but protein before, but I am very interested in what that protein IV would have been like. Make life a lot simpler if you were already healthy. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they generally only give it to people under very particular circumstances. So it's one of those things where they can't, the danger is it can spike your blood sugar in a weird way. And some people turn diabetic from it. So it's one of those things where like you're in there, you know, you don't need, I don't know. It's hard for me to say because I independence is really important to me. So being able to do things for myself, especially while being sick, was just one of those, like I'd change my own ostomy bags. I would hook myself up to this protein and stuff. And the nurses would come by and they were basically there to check my vitals and take blood for blood work. And they'd always say like, oh, can I do that? I'm like, no, you know, like I'm other people are paying for me to live. I'm being supported by other people and it's eating shit every day. Like the worst part about being sick wasn't being sick or having people that I thought were friends, people that I thought I could trust that turned on me once I was weakened. The worst part was having to be dependent on other people for the first time since I was a child. You know, not being able to pay my own way, not being able to do things for myself, not being able to, you know, come and go as I pleased was the worst part. So
yeah, I've had something like that every time I was unable to walk, not being able to do things for yourself. It's a bitch. Yeah. Having to deal with, having to have other people do it for you. In my case, you know, I'm married. My wife has to deal with all that. Not a favorite time for either of us, just because it's a lot to have to deal with.
Yeah, I don't understand how people live their whole life like that. Like an entire adult life, just laying on ass, waiting for other people to do. And
they've accepted their
weakness. One thing, if it's an injury or illness, like you might not like it, but you know, it's at least understandable. But for people that are perfectly capable otherwise physically, they just refuse to. Like, I don't understand how these people can look at themselves in the mirror. And I know it's harsh, but
I mean, that's a distinction that you have to make. Whenever you decide that strength is a good thing, well, then you have to look at the difference. You have to look at the opposite of that. If strength is, in the original sense of the word, something that is not easily bent, be that physically, verbally, whatever, then weakness is the opposite of that, something that's easily bent. Well, yeah, being sick or injured is going to fall into that category. And a lot of people live their entire lives being easily bent, like you said. I think a lot of that is just they've accepted that as normal and acceptable behavior. They're weak people. They're easily bent people. So we have to say, well, what's the dividing line there? We have to say, all right, so there's a difference between someone that is being weak in circumstance. For example, yourself when you were sick, or me, whenever I was unable to walk. That's a weakness of circumstance, a weakness that we're not currently able to help. I mean, yeah, I can get up and hobble my ass over there and do some push-ups on one leg. You know, you could do something that, you know, whatever your Crohn's may have been able to make you do, whatever your intestinal ruptures would have left you able to do.
Picking up a copy of the dictionary and doing pills with that. That was pretty much where I was at for a while.
Yeah. That's unwillful weakness. If you had your way, you would not be like that.
No.
You're like that through circumstance. It is a circumstantial, unwilling weakness. That is different than the people that are willfully weak. Willful weakness is one of the most contemptible things. It's repulsive. It is naturally repulsive. Anybody, even the most forgiving and understanding and the most, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
They use the word liberal nowadays. It's not liberalism. It's something else. It's I don't know exactly what the word in this regard is, but it's people that think they're okay with willful weakness, but they still have a gut reaction of somebody that is willfully and deliberately weak. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
It's human. That's our natural reaction to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to explain. I mean, I've got a friend who I won't refer to in any particular way because I don't want to actually blow this guy's spot up, but he's had a lot of trouble with women in the last 20 years. And I keep trying to tell him it doesn't matter what they say because you are doing things to trigger a part of the human nervous system in these people. You're telling their central nervous system that you are a liability that is going to get them killed. And you're sitting here wondering why these chicks don't want to marry you, have a family with you. What good are you in a situation like that? You can barely
take care of
yourself.
In the most politically incorrect way of saying it, the pity fuck guy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, catching like 2-3. Yeah, it's disgraceful. It's 2 or 3 times a year you get a girl that's trashed enough or is having some sort of self-esteem issue. You know, or the straight up
daddy.
Worst. Yeah, I feel bad for you, so I'm going to do you a favor tonight kind of thing. And sit there and crow about that. It's like you played the role of the, you know, like if we're talking about like a biological evolutionary kind of dynamic, you played the role of the woman in this encounter and you're fucking telling people about this. That's ridiculous. Oh my God.
Random side note.
Yeah,
men in Norse culture didn't wear V-neck shirts because it was seen as feminine.
Yeah,
the more you know,
somebody else sees it as feminine too. You notice I got the normal on right now. Eventually, my giant Irish head will stretch this out, and then this will go into the I only wear this to bed in the winter pile.
All of the dude bros that only wear V-neck shirts are going to be hate commenting this.
I don't care. Hey, of all the videos I have up on my YouTube channel, the only one that has downvotes is the joke one titled "Nobody Likes Wearing Diapers."
I don't know. We could cram as much hate bait into this one as possible.
I mean, I think people want to hear stuff like this. You know, they've all been pretty popular so far, and there has been a good deal of shit talk. I have talked a lot of shit in these episodes so far. Kung Fu Discussion
Group, no,
basically you. Matt and Alex sitting there like this for an hour and a half while I just say, and this is why so-and-so is an asshole, and this is why
I've seen those.
The only reason he's alive is the police will chase me because I look like an idiot.
Oh, shit. What's the quote? I know I keep quoting, Robert Howard books, but the quote about civilized men being able to say things because they know they won't have their skull split.
Yeah. And that is exactly where it's at. That's one of the, I mean,
I have that thought on the daily.
Yeah.
Usually whenever it's a, let me speak to the manager type woman, or whenever it's a very effeminate man. Yeah. And I sit here and think, if this were any other time in human civilization, you would not be able to speak to me like this.
I know, right? Oh yeah.
So I just kind of stand there and smile and nod and listen because I'm thinking how badly it would go for them at any other point in our history.
Yeah. I'm waiting.
In a way, I'm happy for them that they're able to do this and survive. you know?
Yeah, they get their little power fix. I'm waiting for somebody to ask to speak to the manager at the site I'm at, so I can just be like, "Oh, you want to talk to the boss? Let me get him for you." Get the fuck out of my building right now.
Yeah, there's a little comic like that. Yeah, there's a little comic that says that something about the woman saying, "Let me speak to the manager," and then the guy just rolls back in a Dr. Manhattan style pose, and the cosmos unfurls behind him, and he says, "Oh, you poor fool, I am the manager."
Right? Oh my God, I can't wait to abuse that power. I mentioned one of my guards is a guy a little older than me that mostly lived in the South until about 3 years ago, and you know, he's like, "So, what's your philosophy of management?" And I was like, I go, "All around us?" He goes, "Yeah." I was like, "This is my
Louisianian right?" Because that's the vibe I'm getting from the way you said that.
From what?
From the way you said that, I imagine he's a Cajun boy.
I think he mostly grew up in Georgia.
It's a very similar accent. It's similar enough.
Yeah. I'm like, "This is my territory." And he is like, kind of did a face, like a "what do you mean" face. I was like, "I'm not saying these people can't come here. I'm just saying I own and control this like property or a possession. And they're only here because I'm letting them come here." And he's like, "Okay. This is for like, this is what
that's the face right there.
We're here to look at these people, just kind of give them the side eye and make a bunch of unfair judgments. Like, fucking look at this dude. Look at this." Like, you know, most places have casual Friday. This company is run by millennials, so they have formal Friday because every fucking day is casual day. People literally roll into this company in their pajamas. Like, get up out of bed. You know, when you get up tomorrow morning, when I get up tomorrow morning, imagine just, you know, not even putting on shoes, just putting on fucking flip-flops and just going to the office like that. You know, not even washing your face or like brushing your teeth, just get up and then go over there. That's how this company is. And they have open office plan, like an open office space plan, whatever. The desks are all right on top of each other. So I go over there and I just like, I can't help. I'm trying not to judge these people, but I just know like all of the Bostonianness just comes across my face. I'm like, God, 25% of the people there, I feel like I could just reach out and grab them by the chest and it'd be like wasting a whole roll of tinfoil. Just crumple them all up right there and be like, "All right, you're done." And it's a shame. I mean, they do have some professional people, you know, people in their mid to late 30s. They come in business casual. They say good morning and all that stuff. They look like they wash their face. So, and then you just got these people, these weirdos, you know. And I know, I mean, I'm finally old enough to say it. I've got enough gray in my beard, so I'm saying it to fucking kids today. It's brutal. Oh, man. I'm just waiting to hear one of them start talking about politics or something so I can go, like, "You voted in one election. What are you talking about? Just relax." Like, or you didn't even, there's one person that I know, this one,
not even old enough to have voted in an election,
did not even vote in this last election. I can tell, like, this one next year is gonna be,
oh
election.
Man,
no, she's gonna, you know, it's secret ballot, lady. It's a secret ballot. I don't want to fucking hear who you voted for. I see your, you know, I see the asymmetrical haircut. I already know who you voted for. It doesn't matter.
At least the ones with green hair, you already know when you see them.
Oh my God, right? It's ridiculous. Although there are a couple in there that are clearly like, they're getting old. You know, they're the older end of the millennials. So they're like 36, 37 now. And they're kind of starting to get that these kids today look on their face and they're looking at these younger ones and just kind of like,
"Hey man, I'm 29 and I already get it."
Yeah. Oh, it's,
I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's the arthritis or what, but, I'm already getting that.
It's the fun. Hey, I tell people all the time, getting older is fun because now all the shit that you said that was ridiculous in your 20s, the second you turn 30, that same stuff, oh, that becomes very, that's very thoughtful. I never considered it that way. You know, people just automatically take, it's the same bullshit. You still sound like a maniac, but suddenly people take it seriously.
It's that little dab of gray, man. Yeah, or in my case, the hair getting thin.
Yeah, with this stuff, like, since I call it my horror hair because it basically came in during the sepsis. So, like, I love deadpan delivery. I love just neutral tone, straight face, just, and then say the most absurd, bizarre things. And since people know me for really enjoying, you know, Kung Fu and all that, I get to play all sorts of fun games with people that, you know, that aren't really familiar yet. Oh, it's the best part. This has just made it so much. So there are times like when I do start to lose it and smirk like this a little bit. Well, I mean, he's an older man. He wouldn't lie to us, would he? And I'm like, no, you should definitely drop it. Definitely believe everything I say.
You're an authority figure.
I know, right? Oh, it's so
funny. Their politics tells them to listen to authority figures no matter what.
Yeah. Well, unless they're smart and they actually say, you know, I have had a couple of younger people be like, what are your politics? And I'll be like, kill them all. Kill who? It doesn't matter. Just all of them. Anyone, you know. I told my brother you know, in my generation, there's me, then there's nobody for 7 years. Then there's a group of five or six of them that are all about 7 years younger than me. My brother is one of them. You know, when they were all in high school, they kind of flipped out on me and called me like a peace-loving hippie. And I was like, you have no idea. You know, I kind of did the like super villain. Not less violence, more violence. I want more violence. Like, you know, it's like, I respect our father's a police officer. And it's like, I love dad. I respect dad. But if it weren't for him. Well, what do you mean? You know how many people I would just like, come on, I'm walking the way of martial arts. I greet my friends with reverse chops at the throat. Do you think I'm fucking stopping because I like people? No.
I love the silence that hung in the air right before you said that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it is what it is. I know you're not supposed to say it, and I figure it's only a matter of time until somebody on Twitter or something is fucking around on YouTube and they notice, like, wait a minute, there's this person. You're advocating violence. That's wrong. I'm like, hey, it's controlled violence, you know? It's only, you know, I'm not saying kill them in one shot. I'm saying just lightly beat them to death, gently, in a very, you know, compassionate
way. Yeah, no. I'm the karate guy. We say that. You know, yeah, we say that. Kill with one strike. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have put Xingyi is, since it's one of the more aggressive Chinese styles, like it stands out for styles that come from the provinces around Beijing, because most of them, you know, you don't hit people directly in the face. But in Xingyi, the only time you don't hit them directly in the face is because they keep their hands high enough to protect the face and throat. In which case, then the saying is, when I hit someone in the chest, I want them to spit up blood. So it's very, it can be hard to get people on a more serious note, to get people to understand that there's a difference between being emotionally aggressive and being tactically aggressive. And Xingyi is definitely tactical aggression. You know, you want to press somebody, put them on the back foot, get them worried. You know, they say the best defense is a good offense. This is literally one of the most direct ways of applying that sort of strategy with somebody else. If you're trying not to get your nose broken, then you're not going to really be trying to defend every part of the body. You know, if that makes any sense.
I've wondered at that because, you remember, I forget how many days ago, I said something about my general advice to people that practice karate because I knew that there were a couple in the chat, and some of them I assumed were younger than me. For example, Simon Smart doesn't need my advice. He knows more than I do.
Yeah.
You know, I have no doubt about that, no delusions whatsoever. That man knows more than I do.
Yeah.
But if there was anybody that I could give some advice to, if they are a karate man and they want to practice under multiple rule sets, because when it comes to sparring is not a fight.
Yeah.
Competition is not a fight.
Yeah.
So if you only practice under the one rule set, well, congratulations, you're only practicing one little thing. And a fight's not that. A fight is everything.
Yeah.
So you have to practice under multiple rule sets. The only problem that I have with the Kyokushin rule set system is that they don't strike the face with the hands. And I've wondered why. And I think it's because of those Chinese arts and some kind of precedence.
Yeah. Yeah. It's polite. You know, you want to just because you're fighting doesn't mean you have to be rude to another person. And that's all well and good if you're, but if you're interested in surviving, then you really need to start getting comfortable with face shots.
See, I had had people tell me, oh, well, that's because you don't want to do a bare knuckle strike to the face. Okay, but you can still, you don't have to strike the hardest part of the skull. You can cut the face all through here with the knuckle. That's the entire point of a back fist. A back fist cuts the face with the knuckles.
Yeah. I mean, then there's biology. Human faces are shaped like this and human hands are shaped like this because for several thousand years, humans have solved problems by trading face punches. That's what our ancestors did. That's what everybody does. That's, you see little kids do it. But it's
true that if I try to punch you right in the nose, you could duck the head and give me the hardest part of your skull. But it's also true that I could just give a raking blow.
Yeah.
Either way, you know, there's a lot of things that didn't make sense to me for that. So I figured there had to come some older precedent, probably from China, that Masayama would have been aware of because his first martial arts exposure happened in China.
Yeah.
And it had to come from one of those styles. I don't know what style that was. If you had read the same text I read, you would have recognized the name of the style and where it's from. You would have gotten more information out of that than I did.
Yeah, but that's where that kind of stuff comes from. It's generally considered, in the Japanese and Korean styles where you see the do suffix on the end, you know, they've tried to transition it more into a self-cultivation thing as opposed to just raw combat.
Yeah,
it's not.
We go again to Jigoro Kano.
Yeah, it's the more vicious, more practical, more survival oriented mindset that makes martial arts useful for self cultivation. So you can't. There's a saying to the effect of, you know, if you can't fight, it's not martial, and if it isn't beautiful, then it's not the art given to you by your ancestors. You need both for it to be martial arts.
Well,
because any fool can just go scrap in the street and there's nothing, you know, you don't need to learn anything. You just need to actually get into fights. If that's all you're trying to learn. So there are too many people that are, they keep calling themselves martial artists, but it's like, you can't pick up a real staff. You've got this little weird, little hollow waxwood bullshit, you know, it's made out of foam. I can see it's made out of foam. That's why you're whipping it all. You know, these fools. Instagram's been frustrating me a lot.
I'm going to have to find it now.
But I started following, a couple of months ago. I was like, I'm going to expand my presence on social media. So I got a little more active on Instagram and I started following a bunch of hashtags. And I think there's maybe four that I'm still following because most of it was just spring steel swords and people in silken satin outfits with sequins, just doing basically floor gymnastics. And every once in a while they'd put up some karate hands and it's like, oh my God, that's pissing me off. Yeah. People in silk slippers doing fucking cartwheels.
I'm going to have to find what you said now. Now that it's dawned on me, I saved it. You know that I saved it because I put it on Instagram.
Okay.
It's been quite a while ago. But I know I have it on here somewhere.
Yeah, probably some form of, over-the-top shit talk.
No, it was some nice words that you said about yours truly that I had to save. Feel free to fill in the time while I look at the various pictures of tigers that I have uploaded.
I mean, I'm searching for it too now at this point. I think I know what you're
there
talking
about.
I don't remember the quote.
I like Lloyd not because he's a martial artist, but because he's a real martial artist. No, quote, flowery fists and embroidered kicks with him.
Yeah.
That's what that made me think of when you were talking about those hollow stabs.
Yeah, it's brutal. I grew up playing ice hockey too, so I'm extremely used to having a stick in my hand.
I feel like that was a dig at some of the contemporary wushu competitions.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Is that what it was?
That's another reason why I can't, you know, I can't do competitions because I see these people up there and my first instinct
is
like, well, what are you, you know, what are you doing? A mid-range to short-range styling, get your arms open this wide. Like, what is that? You get yourself killed. Like, a sucker could kill you. And we're supposed to be up here having a core, like a fight. Like, get out of here. I can't. They don't let you make people lead in Chinese martial arts tournaments. So it's fucking ridiculous here in the U.S.
Hey, man, even today, China itself is still very sheepish about blood.
Yeah. Oh, it's brutal. That's why that guy, a little over a year and a half ago at this point, mixed martial arts guy was just openly challenging the fraud traditional masters.
Yeah, I remember that guy.
And the only traditionalist that fought him that didn't absolutely humiliate himself was a Wing Chun guy who stayed pretty solid for most of the time, but he caught a couple of shots to the face. And you could see that he just had, like, you know, the adrenaline rush.
I saw that fight, yeah.
Of him resetting to a good ready position. But, that first one, this guy almost lost his license to teach and fight in China.
Did you see what happened to that guy?
The Taiji guy.
Okay, so you did see what happened to that guy. The Chinese government made him issue a formal apology.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the guy that the Taiji master that he beat up, this guy was saying that he could fucking blow the universe up with his, you know, with his mental powers from mastering his unique style of Taiji. And it's like, you're just doing some derivative Yang style shit. Oh, it's frustrating. It's frustrating.
Taiji, see, we're in that weird realm where we're acknowledging what is possible, which is more than what people think is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're not buying the bullshit.
Yeah.
So we're in this weird middle realm.
Yeah. I wrote about this a couple of months ago. Empty force is real, but it's not like Dragon Ball Z power blasting somebody from a car.
Absolutely.
It doesn't work on an amateur. It doesn't work on a beginner.
Around the same time as episode, I think it was episode 5.
Yeah, maybe. It was fairly, yeah. I mean, that was a while ago. There have been so many things that have gotten in the way. Moving from one part of Ohio to another. It was kind of a pain in the ass to find a place to live around here. But
yeah, just being in Ohio for a southerner sounds like a pain in the ass, so I'm not going to comment.
They're friendly people, but there's just, you know, you knew there was such a thing as winter. Why are you acting shocked when frozen water falls from the sky? You know, it snowed here a couple of weeks ago for the first time since I moved into Columbus.
Well, hey, man, you see, I'm outside now, and I'm not even in any kind of discomfort, so, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I'm walking around in my sickness kung fu hoodie for the most part, and people are looking at me like I'm insane. I'm like, it's 38 degrees. Like, it needs to go down 20 more before it's actually cold. Like, what are you doing wearing a parka now? What are you going to do when it actually gets below freezing? Because I know that happens out here. Oh, the lake effect, the lake effect. I grew up next to the ocean. I don't want to hear about a lake. This is ridiculous. But
shit, you had the harbor right there, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and like all people that grew up next to the Atlantic Ocean, I don't want to swim in it because it's dark and it's full of murderous horrors trying to kill me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a scary, scary place.
We have both read entirely too much Lovecraft.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love Lovecraft. The only horror story that's ever actually kept me awake at night is The Rats in the Walls.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it's exactly what it sounds like, too.
You know the thing that gets me about Lovecraft? Yeah. So you know that Robert Howard, who we mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Robert Howard, who wrote Conan the Cimmerian. Mm-hmm. And it is Conan, not Conan. It's an Irish name. I don't know if you knew that or not. The Sumerians are Irish.
Yeah.
I don't know why they made him black haired and blue eyed, but the Sumerians are descendants of Atlanteans, and Atlantis is basically that second group of people that came to Ireland. Those are Atlanteans. Yeah. So that's Howard's understanding of the world.
Yeah.
Howard and Lovecraft were friends. And what's more, they wrote in the same universe. I said something about this some time ago. They were writing stories in the same universe. It's just that the civilized men that Lovecraft wrote about had such a dramatically different reaction than the savage men that Howard wrote about. Call of Atlantis and Conan of Sumeria, they were not afraid of these entities of the outer dark. They were just these devils that, you know, it's the same thing that the Aesir of Norse mythology saw monsters as. This was an opportunity for greater glory. You didn't kill it because it was this evil thing. Good and evil have nothing to do with it. It's just this monster. It's just a thing that you can kill.
Yeah.
It brings you glory to kill it. Oh, yeah. It's a monster. So what? You can kill it. It bleeds. It dies.
Right.
And Lovecraft's modern man was so stricken with fear at it.
Yeah. Permanently, irreversibly insane forever every time you learn something new about the universe.
Yeah.
Fucking pussies.
Yeah, that's the vibe I got from it. The civilized men were just a bunch of pussies.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that kind of is how it is growing up in New England. You know.
It had a double whammy for you. For me, reading Lovecraft growing up, the New England was this mystical land of horror far and far away. But for you, it was like, that shit's right outside, man.
Yeah, no, with some of those stories, I've been to those places. I know, you know, Arkham is one of the only places he talks about that isn't real. But a lot of the other places
Is Innsmouth a real place?
Not exactly, but it's based on a very real place.
Oh.
So there's a lot of very interesting things. I mentioned it earlier, the Bridgewater Triangle. That place is fucking insane. One of my favorite things that I did in college was me and my childhood best friend and the girl I was dating at the time went to an abandoned, haunted mental institution that had been a POW camp. And before that, it had been a mental institution. It had alternated prisoner of war camp and mental institution since,
you know. I think I know the one you're talking about, but I can't remember the name of it.
Aldever School.
Yeah.
On there. Don't go into the sub-basement.
Now I'm going to have to go into the sub-basement if I go there.
That place was completely, we went there multiple times this one summer, and it just.
Is that the place, I think part of it's caved in.
Yeah, it's a fairly large campus. On one side, near one of the exits onto a relatively busy road in the town that it's in, they have a recycling center. In basically like a makeshift, it's essentially a tent, and it only operates in the spring and summer. On the other side, there's an old, you know, like a manor house that when it was a functioning mental institution, that was where the, you know, the director or whatever lived with his family. Now it was a group home for retarded adults that didn't have any families. And everything else in between was abandoned. So you could get into any building you wanted to. You can get anywhere you wanted. Just don't go in the basements. I've never been afraid of anything unusual or paranormal, shall we say. I spent a lot of time doing a lot of really risky, stupid things. And when we considered going down there, I stopped and was like, I'm not doing that. And my girlfriend at the time was like, were you scared? I was like, I didn't say that. I said, I'm not doing that. All of my instincts are telling me not to go in there. Like, I'm not fighting a giant black demon Cthulhu from beyond the universe. Like, that's exactly what's behind that door. I'm not fucking doing that. At least not for you two. Like, get the fuck out of here. You know, there's no way. So that's the only place I didn't go to. We did some spirit photography. We did a lot of, it was fun. It was a fun time. Very dangerous. Like, those buildings are definitely in danger of collapse, and we shouldn't have done some of the things we did, but it's totally worth it.
And I've done a bit of stuff like that myself. I was the guy where, you remember, you know, back in the day, people would say stuff like, well, who would you want to go spend the night in a haunted house with you. Me and a buddy of mine were those guys, which we were the guys that you wanted with you in general, just because this is a guy, the only friend I really kept from high school, because he's a tough son of a bitch. Yeah. And he's a former boxer and we like to spar. But we also have a lot of combined knowledge about magical and metaphysical things. So we were the guys you wanted to have with you. We had an event where a guy actually has stuff burned onto him. Just no explanation, just burned onto his body. And I can read a lot of different kinds of runes. We're talking about, you know, both the fictional stuff where you have like somebody wrote a Necronomicon, you know, just based off of Lovecraft stuff. Yeah. It was inspired by some Icelandic magical staves from back in the day. And then you've also got things like the Elder and Younger Futhark and things like that. And none of those runes were any of the things like that. And I'm just like, oh, that's really cool. And this guy's freaking the fuck out.
I would tell people all the time, it's like, look,
hey, man, you got some unique tattoos, man.
Yeah, it's like, don't worry. Like, you know, going to like, you know, the Stonehenge of America. In,
What is that, Georgia?
No, there's one in New Hampshire. There's a bunch of, you know, just like megaliths and standing stones and stuff. In a lot of parts of New England, they call them wine cellars. They're not wine cellars. They're not wine cellars. If you've ever been to any of the megalithic sites in Western Europe, like France and Spain, or anywhere in the British Isles, it's the same sort of thing. They're not wine cellars, but... you know, going to places like this and having people freak out, seeing ghosts. So ghosts are real. It's like, yeah, well, that's yes and no. Well, what if they get us? Well, you don't really need to worry. Like, I mean, I'll be okay. I don't know about you, but they'd be like, well, fuck you. Like, see, you should have learned kung fu. You should have learned something.
This is the point where we're getting to the intersectionality. Oh, I used a feminist word, intersectionality, right. Of
Well, is it capitalized? That's when it's problematic.
Oh, of martial arts and psionics. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's not that it's not real. It's just that you're not going to be Professor X.
Yeah, it doesn't look the way people think it does.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Jordan Castles actually made a comment in a DM chat earlier today. He was talking about biofeedback and how, like, one point when he was younger, he was thinking about buying a biofeedback kit. And it's like, you don't need that. You're doing advanced martial arts now. You don't need that stuff anymore. This is better than that, because you're the instrument and the experiment and the subject and the product. This is better. Yeah, there's a book I would highly recommend for anybody that's interested in some of the more advanced aspects of like the potential that martial arts study can offer you. It's called Mind Over Matter. It's by a guy named Shi Ming. He was on Bill Moyer's, you know, PBS series about the mind. That's on Amazon Prime right now. So that's like an easy to find thing. But this book, you know, It's barely the thickness of an iPhone, you know, just a couple hundred pages, but this is dense. I mean, I'm a fairly clever guy. I've always read at a really high level. And I had to read this book, 6 or 7 times in a row when, you know, before I started to really get it, but it's laying out, the theoretical framework for the like advanced internal training in Chinese styles, you know, your mind and your body in unison are the laboratory for an experiment, but they're also the equipment that performs the experiment and they're the subject that's being experimented on. So it's a very interesting, somewhat convoluted biofeedback loop, you know, and that's where you get this idea that once you get to the end of the training, you go back to the beginning and you start again with the basics. But now you have one qualitative level of experience to go back and do all this stuff over again. And you just keep doing that until you drop dead. And that's where you get that big benefit from, you know, somebody in my
One of my martial arts ancestors, the famous Sun Lutang. The point of studying martial arts is you live a long life with no health problems, and then you die peacefully in your sleep when you're old.
Well, except in my case, I have to die by weapons.
Hey, well, everybody has their preferences, you know?
I mean, hey, man, that's hey, if you take the Norse shit to the absolute extreme, you go to hell unless you die by weapons. Hell's not the same thing as it is for Christians, though.
Yeah, I know, right? I like to mess with like scumbag Christians by telling them, like, you're so lucky there's no such place as hell, or else you would definitely be going there. And they get all offended. How could you say that? Well, Jesus told you that you were already redeemed, so why are you sitting here going to church? He said you don't have to do that anymore. They get so mad. I fucking love it.
Yeah, I think if I remember right, there are four afterlives. And I give a lot of shit to the Asatru community because a lot of those guys are fake as hell. But there are some good ones, of course. But I think they have four afterlives, if I remember right. There's one for if you die at sea. So definitely don't die on a boat or you're super fucked. You're going to live with a troll for the rest of eternity. She's probably going to fuck your brains out. The next one is you go to hell, which is just a really cold place where all the dead people are. It's basically the same as this, but it's cold as hell because you're dead. You don't need warmth. You're dead. The third one is Frigg's place, which is probably what Tolkien dreamed elves lived in. And then the other one is Valhalla, Valhol. So you know, live there, or is it Valhol? I forget. I don't know how they pronounce that shit. Anyway.
Right.
If you want the good one where you drink and fight every day, you got to die by weapons.
Right. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Which sucks. Cause I was hoping I could just go fuck with a bear when I get too old to live.
Right. Well, I mean, if you give the bear a knife, they're technically armed to the teeth already though. I mean, quite literally. So
yeah.
No, I hadn't given that too much thought. I'm ashamed to say that I made it into my 30s with the young man's sense of invincibility because,
wow, lucky you,
proven functionally invincible up to that point in my life. You know, like when you get hit by a car and you stand up and go, "Huh, hey, that car's fucked up." All right, I'll see you guys later, and then you walk off like
a lucky bastard. I was run over at 14, and I was sitting here going, "Okay. I have seriously underestimated some shit in my day."
Yeah. Oh man, I've got the devil's luck though. So that means for everything like that, like every, you know, I had sepsis, waited a month before going to see the doctor and didn't die in that month. Yeah. Well, I've gotten mine. You know, for every big win like that, I've had an equally large loss.
There's actually a type of psionic that sums up exactly what you are. I don't know if you know that or not.
No, I'm not really too familiar with that. As far as I knew, I was the only person like this.
No, if I remember right, the category is called charmed people. It's basically like, you have an accident or something that makes you have to change your pants, but turns out if you would have gotten on the bus at the time you planned to, you would have gotten in a wreck, things like that.
Yeah. I dated a completely psychotic person toward the end of college for about 3.5 or 4 years. But the upside to that is now when people pull knives on me, I take them away the way you take a crayon from a child. So get that going for me.
That is exactly what the experience of taking a knife away from a crazy woman is like, taking a crayon from a child.
Yeah. Oh man. In Bagua Zhang's theoretical documents, you know, they use a lot of 7-character quatrains. So it's these little poems that are basically 7-character. Like 2 7-character couplets to lay out, just like mnemonics for laying out details about the practice methods or the application method. When they talk about, because Bagua Zhang was developed by people doing like bodyguard security work. So it has some specialized training for dealing with fighting multiple lightly armed enemies that are going to attack like a dog pack. So 2 to 6 guys with at least 1 knife each. How do you deal with that? Well, they've got a method for dealing with that. When it talks about when somebody has a knife, you shouldn't be nervous at all. It's just like reaching into your pocket to get something. Just go for the wrist. That's all you have to worry about. You know, when you think about that, you don't have the time to think about, well, what if he stabs me in the, what if he cuts me in the, yeah, that's, you know, that's sucker. That's sucker talk. That's how you actually get stabbed when you worried about, when you worry about that. So my teacher, Dr. Young, put it the best. If somebody pulls a knife on you, you are definitely getting cut. So accept it. Now you can defend yourself.
Absolutely. So I think that's one of the second things that we interacted on.
Yeah,
I said that about knife defense. Somebody had asked me some ridiculous shit about knife and gun defense. Hey, it's the easiest thing in the world. If they have a knife, you're probably going to get cut. If they have a gun, you're probably going to be shot. Are you going to roll over and die? You probably shouldn't.
Right. Hey, if Batman can take the gun away, you can do it too, right?
Oh, yeah.
No, I had one gun pulled on me when I was in my 20s, and I didn't panic because I thought it was a knife. So, but then, you know, when I noticed, I thought that I'd gotten a new knife out of the encounter, and then I looked down and saw a shitty pistol and was like, oh my God, I almost got shot over this. That was a very soul-searching moment for me. I kind of went home, did a little bit of manly crying in my room. Like, oh my God, I almost got shot. This is fucking
sick. Yeah, I've had that moment too, the almost got shot moment. I didn't get to keep the gun. That's the only difference. I didn't.
Well, no, this was like a rusted out, like this was some garbage that had been getting handed around a street gang for like 20 years. So it was one of those things where I was like, ah, I'm not touching that.
Yeah, gang guns are shit. So duct taped all to hell and everything else.
Yeah, no, it's only, I only even noticed because the kid did the big fucking, you know, 90s hood movie, like lift up his shirt and fucking reach in all stylized. So I was like, he's going to stab me in the kidney. So I booted him. Turned out it wasn't a knife and it wasn't my kidney that was going to be in trouble. So it was an interesting experience to say the least. It kind of gave me an idea of what's possible. I had sort of, bluffed my way through a lot of situations up to that point in my life. I had just sort of, you know, kept a straight face and convinced people that I had a
lot messing with you was not their best idea.
Like I was able to talk my way out of as many problems as I talked my way into. But that really made it obvious to me, like you could be in the middle of the shit already and there's a way to bluff your way out of it. But instead of bluffing the other person, like bluffing the opponent, you kind of bluff yourself in a way. It's hard to explain.
Hey, that's a part of it. Self-talk, man. The gurus are not completely wrong.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, and that's why I correct a bunch of people I know on that. I'm like, you know why shit always goes my way? Like, why? I was like, I just fucking said in like that insane rant I just gave where I said I'm the greatest like four times. Where do you fucking think I got that confidence from? Like this is why I can pull this shit off. You're sitting there going, oh, my mom liked me more when I was a kid. Well, then no, you don't talk like that. You have to.
Nothing beats irrational self-confidence.
Yeah, right. It's like I'm the fucking best. I can do this. So, you know, like I tell people now, I'm like, look, I've gotten a couple of new students in the last few years with the like, Kung Fu kept me from dying from a fatal illness. I think it can help you get laid once or twice. You know, like I think it can help you lose 15 pounds before your sister's wedding or whatever, you know, like it'll be all right. You know, you've got a nice modest goal. So we can definitely pull this off. No problem.
People want very simple things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so easy. So easy. But then again, you know, those excuses sometimes, I mean, I found one of the biggest challenges in teaching is like getting like that invincible, impenetrable armor that people build for themselves out of excuses, just getting past that. I mean, it only needs to be one time, but you know, there are people that will make you work for that first like penetration of their excuse armor. You know, and then from there, it's simple, but that first time. So, yeah, I've,
I've known a few people that have spent years training the martial arts and building themselves up, improving their ability, like physical abilities, improving their minds. And then after a couple of years, just put that excuse armor back on, you know, like, well, now I've got a two pack and I can make this excuse. It's like, oh, what are you fucking doing? Like, you finally lost the triple chin and now you're going to go right back into that world. Fuck. Not that I'm talking about anybody in particular.
Yeah. Add the disclaimer.
Oh my God. Yeah. Before I started filming with Jonathan Pritchard for the first episode, I complained a little bit. I was like, you know what? Like, I want to try and get past this. You know, like I can't, this is America in 2019. I'm never going to get to fight this guy to make things right. You know, the law will never allow it. Plus, I'm not paying money to fly back to Boston to fight somebody that I know for a fact I could beat. So, you know, I need to just let this go. And he's like, yeah, that would be better. You know, it'd be good for you to move on. Man, I've talked shit about this dude every fucking episode since then. I make fun of this kid on Twitter like once a day. It really it hurts my feelings in a way. Like, I hate to say it like that, but like, it's like, bro,
use the F word.
I'm supposed to be punching you in the face until we're friends again, and you just, oh, fucking.
Hey, I know some guys that are in the exact same kind of situation, except in their case, I think they're fighting over something stupid, fighting over a woman. But, hey, it is what it is. You know, that's their reason for fighting, but they're in that kind of a relationship. And they've already beat the hell out of each other one time, and they already know which one is the better man in terms of fight.
Yeah.
But they just can't let it go.
You don't chase the place. It's simple. There's billions of them. They're fucking, they're everywhere. You can't take.
That's the thing. He did. Oh, the guy did. He replaced her, and he still. But it's not about the woman. They think it's about the woman, but it's about other things. It's one of those things. Whatever you think it's about is probably about something else.
Yeah.
Whether it's something with them or something internal, it's one of those things. It might not be about the guy. It might be about some kind of slight. It might be about, you know, whatever was represented by the act. It's something bigger than whatever it actually feels like it is. Otherwise, it would be gone by now.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. That's so rough. All those different, you know, you see it more and more in popular fiction. Is it worth fighting over? No, then it's not really a problem. That kind of attitude. You know, just to have the fight and it's still a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like some simian level shit. Somebody's going to die for this to be resolved. And that's a shame.
And hey, whenever that does happen, the death doesn't usually resolve it.
Yeah. No, there's no
way. Whatever the beef is, it's usually bigger than the people. And it's usually bigger than if one of them dies.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
I suppose that's one benefit of the modern world of martial arts. There's no generational vendettas anymore. But
I don't know about that. There's a couple of schools I fully intend to stomp the shit out of once I hit black and I can compete with them.
All right, that's nice. It's good to hear that there's still people dojo crashing. I've unfortunately been in a couple of situations, but you know.
Speaking of which, I believe we've brought up the topic of manga before. A good one involving the main character being a dojo stormer is Garuden. Check that shit out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm familiar with that one.
There were two. Now, the first one was not that good. The one from, I think it was written in the 80s. That one was the writer. Okay. That guy brought on the guy that wrote and illustrated Grappler Baki. Keisuke Itagaki, and had him draw it, and his version is so much better. I don't know why it's impossible to find, but you can find it.
Yeah.
Huh. You would actually recognize some of the characters that he brings in, because that's what I look for in these. The only series that I've really read are where the characters are fantasized versions of actual martial artists through history. Then it's fun, you know?
Yeah.
Then you're like, oh yeah, I see who this guy's supposed to be.
Oh, here we go. Which one is this? I think I found it. Yeah. working security, I've gotten very good at finding online manga and comics. You know, not just Japanese. One of my personal favorites right now is a Chinese comic, The Ravages of Time. It's a fictionalized version of the Three Kingdoms, like Romance of the Three Kingdoms, end of the Han Dynasty. You know, if you're familiar with Cao Cao, the guy that General Cao's chicken is named for. He's one of several historical figures that are credited as the creators of this. You know, this guy, he's pretty famous for running a commentary for The Art of War as well. You know, he was like a masterful at literature and at warfare. So he's one of those types.
The two go hand in hand.
Predates Musashi by about 1,000 years. So it's a very well-developed tradition to have that sort of combine the civil and martial type things.
In which Unk knows what I'm referencing and calls me out on it immediately.
I'm sure I don't know what you mean. But The Ravages of Time, I highly recommend that one. It's fucking, you know, you see in the chats and on Twitter, I use a lot of panels from different comics.
Funny enough, the boxer friend that I mentioned earlier has recommended it to me.
Yeah. Oh, it's so worth it. I mean, if you like mind games, you know, if you like schemes within schemes, and oh, it's fucking so good. Yeah, their version of Lu Bu, he's white Jesus. Oh, and he's not even the most white Jesus character in this fucking comic. Oh, it's so good. I you know, it's...
Why is everybody white in Japanese and Chinese manga? Easy answer. It's easier to animate white people.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's nothing like a nice generic symmetrical face to just kind of make it... you know, I like to mess with people. Being from Boston, like most Bostonians, I'm of Irish descent. So
it's almost like we're more handsome than everyone else.
Yeah, right. When people get a little uppity, a little too proud and stuff, it's just like, yeah. You know, it's like you hear, like, hear an Italian say racist comments, I'll be like, yeah, but you guys aren't really white. You're Mediterraneans. It's different. Only us Celts are white. How about that? And they go, fuck you, dude. Yeah. Yeah, you'd like that, wouldn't you? You still wouldn't be white, though. Oh, fuck you. What the fuck? What do you want from me? I don't make the rules. White people don't have brown eyes. Fuck you. Fuck you. Oh, it's so much fun. It's so fun. And I can get away with it, too, because I actually am, you know, having been sick for the last 10 years, I was super pale because I was inside all the time. So I'd just be like, my glorious white skin is completely unmarred by the sun. And yet you're quite dark, aren't you? You've been doing manual labor, haven't you? Would you go out to the kitchen and just get me something?
I no longer feel bad for how pale I look in this light.
Right? Oh, it's fun. But yeah, one of my favorites is to tell people that, you know, ancient Celts were the white gods of everybody's mythology. Well, how could you say that? Well, I mean, glorious white gods with beards and technology. I mean, who else could they be talking about? See him get all mad. Oh, fuck that. Germans. Fuck them. They don't count. I love doing that one too. That one gets a lot of play out here. Actually, I'm not going to lie. Being in the Midwest, plenty of Germanic faces out here. I'm just like, yeah, you square heads. You don't count.
I don't know how to pronounce it, but the Tuatha De Danann were basically aliens.
Yeah, right? Yeah, alien space gods. It's right there in Ancient Aliens.
I'm pretty sure that's where Howard got the whole Atlanteans were, you know, Irish people and Atlanteans. That's basically the same lineage there.
Yeah. Oh, it's super fun stuff. I mean, I've got
it's weird if you go into his world breakdown.
Yeah.
It's actually very convincing. You're sitting, you go, oh shit, we actually
That essay on the Hyborian age, that's a great read. And it's all just technical, but it's just set up.
You're sitting there going oh shit.
Yeah, right.
I'm descended from Atlanteans.
Right? Yeah. Just sitting there like, dude. I discovered that in high school, and I was kind of like, all right, you know.
Atlantis isn't lost. We've just been really fucking drunk for a couple thousand years.
Yeah. Hey, well, I mean, when the sky falls after you save civilization like six times, you're just kind of like, it doesn't really matter anymore. We'll let the squareheads take it. It'll be fine. I messed with a German friend of mine by actually using Norse mythology. Like, you know that story? I forget which saga it's in, but it's just, you know, the first man and woman have three sons, and the descendants of the three sons are the different types of people in the world. And the one son, who's basically a goon, he's basically like, he's not really a slave, but he's essentially the ancestor of all slaves. And I'll be like, you know who the Germans are descended from? Like, oh, fuck you, dude. I'm like, hey. It's not my fault that you're not descended from the beautiful ones, the shining ones like us. Fuck you, dude, fuck you. Oh, yeah, it's fun.
Hey, they can get as
racism
mad as they
is
want.
Wrong.
Look at it.
But teasing people based on things like that is right. Oh, at least when you use mythology to justify it. Yeah, I'm actually waiting for in Irish myth, one of the major genres is the cattle raid story. So I've got a copy of like the second most famous cattle raid coming. It's fun. It's fun. This one is all about the Queen of Connacht going to steal a magic bull from one of the sub kings in the province of Munster in Ireland, and she's able to pull it off because the guy that she's having sex with behind her husband's back realizes that the guy that they're trying to rob, he's got a wife who's like the only woman in Ireland who has as large a sexual appetite as himself. So he's kind of like, maybe I'll help you steal this cow. I think I can do this for you. And the queen's like, yes, get me the cow. Hey, wait a minute. You're not going there for the cow. And, you know, there's all sorts of crazy shit. And, you know, people have confrontations. Are you coming to steal my wife? Yes, that's exactly. So, yeah, betrayal, counter betrayal. It's okay to have sex with other people when you're married in the Ireland of these stories, but at the same time, you know, like it is kind of true about Irish Americans in a way. You know, it's like you can fuck whoever you want, but you only love me, kind of thing. And there's plenty of stories like that where the main wife is just like, if you were to use the L word with her, I'll kill that bitch. There's one story about the famous hero Cú Chulainn, where he had fallen in love with the goddess wife of the god of the sea, and his human wife, like his actual wife, he didn't care. Like, she didn't care when he was just running around having sex with this goddess. But then when he realized that they were kind of falling in love and they were gonna like run off together, she just kind of like, nope. She armored up. She got all her closest homegirls. They armored up, and then they went to go jump this goddess. And when the goddess saw them coming, she was like, I sense that your wife truly loves you, so I'm going to take off right now because I don't feel like doing this. No. And then the sea god, Manannan, shows up, and he's like, so you're going to steal my wife, huh? I see how it is. Luckily, he had a magic cloak that if you shake it at people, then all of a sudden they forget whatever they were just doing. So he just kind of was like, ha, ha, zam, and made his wife forget this dude. And kind of like, ha, ha, now you forget her too. You know, but he still had to deal with his angry wife. It's like, you fucking, you know, you use the L word with that bitch, I'll fucking kill her. It's good stuff.
You can't get away from the angry wife in Irish stories.
All right. Magical shit-talking weapons that question your sexuality if you don't kill people hard enough. Oh, I already said you were gay. Like, whoa, what the fuck? Like, or the best ones are the ones where they just kind of like the weapons actually, they basically call people cowards and then just fly around on their own killing people because you're not killing hard enough. Oh, it's so good. I understand why people like, yeah, you know, Greek mythology and all that. I get it, but I'm just saying.
It's nowhere near as fun.
Yeah, like they don't have the weapons that basically tell you you're gay if you don't kill this guy hard enough, which is fucking great to me.
I like to imagine that it sings AC/DC to itself while doing its dirty work.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Done dirt cheap. There literally is a spear that they use to defeat the Fomorians that it has to be kept upside down in a vat of blood, mead and anesthetic, because otherwise it will burst into flames and fly around killing the sons of kings while shrieking. So yeah, it's good stuff. Oh, it's so fun. And after I discovered that shit in college, I could never go back to Greek mythology, because it's like, this is just people arguing over women. That's like,
yeah,
already regular life. I don't want to read about that. Who cares if he turned into a fucking swan before he did it? That's lame. I want to see where a guy gets his arm chopped off, and one of the shit talkers is like, you can't be king anymore because your body's not perfect. So he's like, can't I? And he has this, you know, the magical smith just makes him a robot arm, and he's like, and now I'm king again. It's fucking great. Oh my God. The sword that's the prototype for Excalibur is from Irish mythology. Except it's way better than having the sharpest blade in the world in the Irish version. When you swing it, it makes a rainbow that cuts everything in front of it. So to like the man that one of the god that owned it, to make a point of demonstrating its power, he takes it out and just does like a casual swing over toward a couple of hills, and the tops of all three hills just kind of pop off and fall into the sea. And he's like, do we really need to fight? The rest of those guys that he was against were kind of like, all right, you win. He's like, I know I win. Now bring me your shit, because it's mine now. Every time someone picks a fight with you, if you can make them shut up by talking trash, you get to have sex with their wife and you get all their stuff. Like, who doesn't, you know, like,
they were simpler times.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so great. All problems are settled with shit talk and then fist fights. And then you drink, not always in that order. Sometimes you drank first, but it always had those three things. Like, oh man, you know, I never gave much thought to like, you know, genetic memory and stuff like that. But when I started reading Irish mythology, I was just like, why do I feel like everything's right in the world? Like, this is how I feel like I should be telling people that I'm better than them and that I should get the biggest cut of the pork. I kind of feel like that's how it should be. Champion's portion. But the downside is, you know, getting the taboos put on you. If you break them, there goes your power. It's way worse than, you know, I got sick and my kung fu kind of broke a little bit. But I didn't have all of my power completely destroyed by, you know, some coincidence. The hero Cúchulainn. Cúchulainn means the hound of Cúchulainn. So he got a taboo put on him where he's not allowed to eat dog meat. But he had another taboo where he wasn't allowed to turn down things offered to him by old women. So the goddess of war tries to have sex with this dude. He's like, you're not good enough for me. Be gone. So she gets really mad. So she disguises herself as an old woman and offers him some dog meat stew. And he's like, oh, you motherfucker. So he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. Like, which one? Like, which do you want to die? It's literally pick your poison case. So he, you know, makes his choice and he eats the dog meat stew. And things don't go so well after that. So. I am glad that that's not still happening, but I would love to solve all of my problems with a shit talk contest.
Well, I mean, you think he would have just diddled the old lady and been done with it?
Well, I mean, in her normal form, she's a beautiful, attractive, alluring goddess who will just, you know, make sure that you're murdered heinously when she's done with you. So he was pretty smart to be like, yeah, I'm not doing that. But at the same time, you know, yes.
I'm just saying.
Means yeah, like, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
I'm just saying, if you have to choose between the goddess or eating the dog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's brutal. It's brutal. The best part was that there had been a couple of confrontations where he had wounded her before. And because he's the son of a god and he uses magical weapons, they're the sort of like, you get hit by this sword, you never get healed from it unless he gives you a personal blessing. You know, so she kind of like tricked him a couple of times where like she gave him some water and he was thirsty. He was like, thanks, bless you. And like took a sip and all of a sudden that big gash in her head heals up and shit, you know, and the last slap in the face was gives her a blessing for getting the stew. And then he takes a bite and realizes it's dog meat. And he's like, oh, fuck. And that's when the evil wizards were able to finally kill him. And I'm not even making that up because they were definitely evil wizards. You gotta love it. Well, evil druids. It's kind of better than an evil wizard in some ways.
That there, that's your solution for evil druids.
Right. Oh yeah, I recommend all those stories to anybody that likes a good epic, because they're just full of exactly what I just described: magical shit talking weapons. People, you know, basically saying, "I will make fun of you so hard that you will get pimples, and your wife will have sex with somebody else." Guys just being like, "Well, I guess I have to murder you then." It's hard to explain.
Wasn't that part of the story of Cocopelli?
It's a part of a surprisingly large number of Irish myths from all sorts of different legends.
This one was American. I forget the exact tribe or tribes, but the if you don't do what I say part of it for this particular trickster was, if you don't do what I say, then all the women's tits are going to beat together until they're black and blue and no fun for you. And then all the men were like, well, shit, I guess we're doing what this guy says.
Right. Except the weirdo. It's like, no. I would just hold up a little bit.
Yeah, these old tricksters didn't fuck around.
Yeah, that's the best. The sea god that I mentioned, Manannan, he had this thing where, like simple tricks. Like he had magical trickster shit, but he also did simple stuff. Like he had a hat that was colored, you know, red on one side and blue on the other. And he'd walk down through a town with the hat on. And then he'd come back later and say, I'll give this pile of gold to anybody that can say what color my hat was when I walked through town earlier. And you get the people from two different sides of the street getting into fights, and he'd sit there and cackle at them, like just being a dickhead. And if they got mad at him and figured it out, he'd shake that magic cloak and make them all forget. And then just like skate on them. Oh yeah. Plus he had the best sword in mythology, I think, the Answerer. If he pointed it at you, you had to answer any question, honestly, that he asked you. But there's also like a pun in the name, because the answer could be, if somebody takes a shot at you, how do you answer that back? You know, and it's one of those weapons where if you get hit with it, you get cut, it's never going to heal. So fun stuff.
I need to put some runes on this thing then.
Right. Yeah. But you just engrave a curse in there.
Well,
and it doesn't have to be like a stereotype curse. It can be a really, you know, a fun curse.
We'd be going off the rails for that, because then I'd be getting into all sorts of magic that I don't feel like talking about right now. We'd be getting off the rails then, even though that's related to martial arts, it's technically of a different sort.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
That's actually the kind of thing, the last time somebody got me on a talk like this, the stuff they wanted to talk about, but I don't think that ever got published.
Yeah, that, hey, well, I'm looking to continue these sorts of things for as long as possible, and there's always more to talk about, so. Yeah, I think the next time you come on, we can definitely talk about martial spiritualism, which would be super fun.
That's where we get into the Qigong, the berserkers, the, let's see, maenads. What else? Oh, yeah. Shit. What did the Irish call theirs? I've forgotten it. I know the Welsh had.
It depends. Different people had different, like, the most famous one is, again, Cú Chulainn, the warp spasm, where he would basically, you know, like the Incredible Hulk, he would basically completely transform, you know, hair standing up on end, one eye sucked in, you know, blood shooting out of his skin, just going hog wild. Yeah, there was one from his childhood when he was about 10 years old where he flipped out, and they couldn't stop him. So the plan was, they got 3 barrels of ice cold water, and then all the women in the city ran out and flashed him. And he kind of, like, even though he was in monster mode, he kind of did one of these, like, you know, because you know how little kids are. They don't want to see titties. So he kind of, like, did one of these, and they yanked him up real quick and, like, tossed him into one barrel of cold water. It just fucking exploded. They tossed him into the second one. All the water boiled off his steam almost immediately. They throw him in the third one. It just got really warm, and he kind of came out normal, like, what just happened? But fun stuff. Yeah, it's a... That's probably my favorite, like completely over the top, out of control transformation, just because, you know, there's an ancient Irish word that basically means Hulk out.
That's the word that I was trying to think of.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not confident in my Gaelic pronunciation, so I'm not going to even try.
Oh boy. Tell me about it. Neither am I. I spent about a couple of weeks trying to figure that shit out. And I said, yep. Nope.
That's the fun thing about it. You know, B's are V's and H's are W. It's fucking ridiculous, but
yeah, it's one of those things. People that are from Ireland can't say that shit. And people that are of Irish descent can't say it either.
Yeah. I knew one kid growing up that was trying to learn Gaelic and he gave up after a while. This kid had stereotype, you know, like orange hair, freckles and stuff. It's like, shit, if he can't do it, none of us are going to be able to figure it out. Well, we've gone pretty far afield. We've been on here for a couple hours at this point. I'm not sure how long we've been recording, but this might be a good spot to wrap it up.
Yeah, we'll call it.
So, where can the people find you on the internet?
Businessandbullets.com or businessandbull on Twitter. Twitter cut off the last couple of letters. Bunch of bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just Business and Bullets everywhere. YouTube, which is really old shit. Nothing recent. Instagram, which I never post to, unless it's food. And
isn't that what it's for?
Well, food and attention seeking, but I don't do a whole lot of that.
I'm sure I don't know what you mean.
Yeah, I'm going to do a couple of picks where I do a high kick and just hold it. I want everybody to look at me in my tight sweatpants. Apparently, that's what everybody on the karate tag does.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been seeing a lot. So that's what I was getting at. Most of the martial arts tags I followed, I had to unfollow because it's just, it's gymnastics floor exercise.
You hear these fucking coyotes?
No, I can't hear it.
Yeah, they're too far away. They don't want
to. It's not. It might come over in the audio later, but I'm not hearing it on my computer speakers right now.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be fun. So, this has been Crossing Hands, episode 5. It's been a good conversation. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it. All right.